Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Get 2 months of Skillshare absolutely free. All you have to do is go to skillshare.com/AC to start your 2 months now. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. Atlanta, once again, we are coming your way for the Herding Tigers workshop on November 8th. Go to accidentalcreative.com/Atlanta to learn more. We're going to talk about how you can unleash the best work of your team. If you lead a small team, if you lead a big team, bring a couple of people with you. Bring a couple of your teammates with you, and we're going to have lots of exercises, conversations, things that you can do to help you approach your work in a more productive, meaningful way. So again, accidentalcreative.com/Atlanta to learn more. We live in an age in which it is difficult to focus. I mean, focus is really one of the things I hear most often from people when I say, what is it that stands in the way of you doing your best work? It's time, but usually time is a function of focus. How we allocate our finite attention often determines how we spend our time. So we have to learn to put our thoughts, our mind, our focus, allocate our finite mental cycles to the places where it's going to produce the most value in our life and in our work. The problem is we have many, many distractions in our world, and not just the obvious ones like Netflix and, you know, playing with our phone all day, but things that seem like really good work, but are actually distracting us from our most valuable work. So on today's show, we have Nir Eyal. He's going to be talking with us about how to become undistractable. How do we structure our lives and our focus in such a way that we're really allocating those finite mental cycles to the things that matter most? Before we jump into that, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. So we've talked often on this podcast about the importance of lifelong learning. If you are not growing, you're dying. It's a principle of nature. You need to commit yourself to lifelong learning, putting yourself in positions where you're learning new skills, developing yourself, and applying those skills in new and unique situations so you can continue climbing the rugged mountain of growth. Well, Skillshare is your partner in helping you do that. It's an online learning community with thousands of classes for creators, entrepreneurs, and curious people everywhere. You can take classes in illustration, graphic design, photography, music production, film and video, productivity, entrepreneurship, you name it, they've got it. So whether you're just picking up a new skill for your day job, which is really important, or maybe you're figuring out your next side project or pursuing a lifetime passion, Skillshare has classes for you. So one of the things I love about Skillshare is that if I'm in a season where I need just a spark, I need something to help me get over the hump in a project I'm working on, I can usually find a class to help me do it. For example, right now I'm in book writing mode. I'm actually working on a new book. And there is an entire suite of courses on Skillshare about creative writing. Susan Orlean has a class called Creative Nonfiction, Write Truth with Style. There's a course called Storytelling 101, Character, Conflict, Context, and Craft. There's a course about creative personal writing, writing the real you. So really applying who you are to what you write. If you want it, you can find it on Skillshare. So join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with an offer just for listeners of the Accidental Creative Podcast. You can get 2 months of Skillshare absolutely free. That's right. Skillshare is offering the Accidental Creative listeners 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes absolutely free. To sign up, all you have to do is go to skillshare.com/AC. Again, that's skillshare.com/AC to start your 2 months now. That's skillshare.com/AC. And we thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's so great to have on the show today, Nir Eyal. He is the author of a new book called Indistractable: How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. Nir, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thanks so much, Todd. Great to be here.
So I've been so excited for this interview. I mean, really looking forward to chatting with you because I do think this book addresses a real problem, a real issue that we face culturally, which is the fact that there are so many choices as to where we put our attention. And I think we like to lament the fact that our attention is so fractured. But I think my question for you is, we all know this, Why aren't we doing something about it? Right? It seems like we like to talk about the problem, but we're not really doing anything about it. So why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, so I think what's happened is that we definitely have new distractions. I mean, I do think that the world is potentially a more distracting place if you are looking for distraction. Mm. But the fact is, distraction is nothing new, right? Plato talked about this 2,500 years ago. He called it akrasia, the tendency that we all have to do things against our better interests. And his question was why, right? If we know what to do, why don't we just do it? And the answer is because we get distracted. And so that's really what I wanted to talk about in this book. And the research that I did, let me be very honest with you, for myself, right?
Sure.
I felt like I was very distracted. I would sit down with my daughter and I would check my phone. I would be with my friends and check my phone. I would sit down to work and I would check email or, mm-hmm. you know, Slack channels when I really wanted to do that big project. And so I constantly kept getting distracted. And at first, my impulse was to blame technology. But what I discovered was that actually the root cause of distraction goes much, much deeper. It's not just about the technology.
Well, I think that's a great segue into the next question. So what are, what are some of those reasons? What are some of the things that draw us into that? And by the way, just as a point of just sort of corroborate some of what you're saying, I went with a friend to a concert a couple of weeks ago, and it was a big outdoor sort of festival type concert. I was blown away by how many people near were holding up their phone and watching this incredible concert, by the way, with like 100,000 people that's happening all around them. This, you know, just cacophony of sensations and sounds and smells and sights and all of this. And they're watching it through this little tiny 5-inch screen because they're trying to, and I'm like, why are you?
Which they will never watch later.
No, absolutely. Like, why are you doing that? Like, you're capturing this moment that you're missing so that you can watch it later, like, or just so you can share, like, why? And, you know, but I think that really, I mean, to your point about sitting down with your daughter and checking your phone, or, you know, being in a meeting and checking your email, or, you know, I see couples sitting in restaurants just looking at their phone, sitting across from each other. And I'm like, you're right there. You're right across from each other, you know?
Yeah.
So why? So what are these things that draw us in that cause us to do this?
Right. So if we really want to understand distraction, let's define it real quick. Let's understand what the term means. The best way to understand what distraction is to understand what distraction is not. So the opposite of distraction is not focus. Mm-hmm. If you look at the etymology of the word, the opposite of distraction is traction. That in fact, both words come from the same Latin root, trahare, which means to pull. And they both end in the same six-letter word, A-C-T-I-O-N, that spells action. So traction is any action that pulls you towards what you want to do, things that you are doing with intent. Now, the opposite of traction is distraction, anything that pulls you away from what you plan to do with intent, anything that is not what you plan to do. So this is a really important for two reasons. One, anything can become traction. So if you want to play that video game, if you want to be on Facebook, if you want to check your phone, if you want whatever it is, pray, meditate, take a walk, whatever it is you want to do, that can become traction if you plan for it. And so that's a very important lesson, because I hate this ridiculous hierarchy that people have of, oh, you know, you checking Facebook or you on Candy Crush, that's morally inferior to me watching football for 3 hours.
Right.
Well, there's no difference. If you plan to do it with your time, great, enjoy it, but do it with intent. Do it on your schedule as opposed to someone else's schedule. Mm-hmm. The other thing that's really important about this is that just as anything can become traction if we plan for it, anything can become a distraction if we are doing if we are doing something that is not what we intended to do with our time. Mm-hmm. So this is what I call pseudo work. So I don't know if you've experienced this. This happened to me all the time. I would sit down at my desk and I'd say, okay, now I'm going to work on that big project. Now I'm going to do that thing that I've been putting off right after I check email.
Right.
Right after I check my Slack channels or talk to my coworker for just a quick sec. And then 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour later, I still haven't done the thing I told myself I would do.
Right.
So even if it feels worky, even if it feels like something that's productive, it can still be a distraction.
Yes.
So we got traction, we got distraction. Now, what pulls us towards these two things are triggers. And there are two types of triggers. We have the external triggers, you know, the pings, the dings, the rings, all of these things in our environment that prompt us to either traction or distraction. And that's kind of what people tend to blame. And certainly that plays a role, right? There's a lot we can do to what I call hack back the external triggers. But in my 5 years of research, what I discovered was that actually the most common source of distraction are not the external triggers, but in fact, the internal triggers. That most distraction does not come from outside of us, but in fact, comes from within us. Why? Because the root cause of distraction is the root cause of all behavior. If you ask people, what is the root cause of all behavior? What's the seed of human motivation? They'll tell you typically it's some version of carrots and sticks, right? The pursuit of pleasure and the avoidance of pain. This is called Freud's pleasure principle. Unfortunately, it's wrong. Neurologically speaking, that is not what's happening. That everything we do for one reason. And that is to escape discomfort. Everything we do, even the pursuit of pleasurable sensations, is in fact the desire to escape discomfort. Wanting, longing, craving, desire. There's a reason we say love hurts, because neurologically that is exactly what is happening. Mm-hmm. In fact, we know in lab rats, you can shut down their liking system, and yet if their wanting system is still intact, they'll still do something even if they don't like doing it. Because the wanting system works based on discomfort. The liking system works based on pleasure. So everything we do is about the escape of discomfort. We know this physiologically, right? If we go outside and it's cold, we put on a jacket. If it's hot, we take it off. You know, so we know that that's how the body works. It's called the homeostatic response. If something feels uncomfortable, that's what spurs us to action. Now, the insight here is that the same process goes on inside our heads. That when we feel some kind of uncomfortable sensation, we look to escape it with action. So if you're feeling lonely, you check Facebook. If you're uncertain, you Google. If you're bored, you check stock prices, sports scores, the news, Reddit, Pinterest, YouTube. All of these things cater to an uncomfortable sensation. So here's the answer. The fact of the matter is that if all behavior is spurred by a desire to escape discomfort, that means that time management is pain management. That it doesn't matter what, you know, latest life hacks or gurus du jour techniques are, people are praising. Fundamentally, if we don't face this fact that everything we do is about a desire to escape discomfort and that time management is pain management, if we don't learn techniques to cope with that discomfort, we will always become distracted by something. So that's the very first step. So the first step to becoming indistractable is learning these techniques to master the internal triggers. The second step is to make time for traction. It's about making sure that if you want to live according to your values, you have to turn your values into time. The third step is to hack back the external triggers to make sure that we take steps to outsmart these companies, that we can do a lot when it comes to removing the external triggers, not only on our devices, not only on our computers, that's kindergarten, that's basic stuff, but also in our office environments. For example, how do we hack back meetings, hack back emails, hack back the open floor plan office? Right. Which turns out to be way more distracting than anything you find on your phone.
Please. Yes.
I'll tell you how to do that. There's a secret to that. And then finally, the fourth step is to prevent distraction with pacts, where we can actually use tech to block out tech distraction. So that's the four basic steps.
All right. So let's dive into, we talked a lot about internal triggers. Let's move on to making time for traction. I would love it. Could you just give us a really simple, what is something we can do to begin to make time for those things that, you know, that we really want to do versus defaulting to comfort and distraction?
Yeah. Yeah. So here's the thing. You can't call something a distraction unless you know what it distracted you from. So many of us, we spend so much time and money protecting our stuff, right? We have home alarms, we have security systems on our cars, we keep our money in safes and bank accounts. But when it comes to our time, something that every human on the face of the earth gets the same number of every single day, yeah, sure, come on over, take as much of it as you want. And the fact of the matter is, if you don't plan your day, somebody's going to plan it for you. Mm-hmm. So if you have a big old white space in your day and you expect to live the life you want, you're just delusional. Because in this day and age, you have to plan your day. You have to, if you want to live according to your values, and I'm not telling you what your values should be, by the way. If you want time to exercise, if that's according to your values, if, you know, values are defined as the attributes of the person you want to become. So if that's a value of yours, to take care of your body, to take care of your mental, physical health, where is that on your calendar? If you think that spending time with friends is important to you, spending time with your spouse, your significant other, your kids, if that's important to you, that needs time on your calendar. And of course, when it comes to work and when it comes to being creative at work, that does not happen by accident per your podcast. It happens because we make time for it. If we don't plan that time, and it can be, by the way, huge swaths of time to be creative, but if we don't make sure we make that time, if I don't plan time to be at my desk at 9:30 every morning, then for sure nothing creative is going to come from it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because it doesn't just happen. People don't just write novels spontaneously. You don't just like get together with friends. It doesn't happen that way anymore. There are too many distractions. Maybe that was a bygone era. But the fact is, you know, if you don't make that time for the important things in your life, you know what you're going to do with that time.
Right.
You're going to be on Facebook. You're going to be on email. You're going to check the news, whatever, you know, Donald Trump tweeted today. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to occupy our brain if we don't make time for the things that are valuable in our life.
Yes, that's exactly right. And, you know, one of the things that I'd like to tell clients is that, you know, we don't, you know, most people fall to the level of their infrastructure, right? So whatever your infrastructure is established to help you accomplish, that's what you're going to do. So people ask me about writing books and I'll say, well, I mean, I've written 4 books, almost 5 books now in the last handful of years. And the reason is because I make time every single day when I'm working on the book project and I write 500 words, 700 words a day, period. Right. And that's
it.
But if without that choice, it doesn't happen. If I waited until I felt like writing on my book, like it's not going, as you know, because nobody feels like writing a book.
It's hard work, man. That's exactly right. And so here's the thing. We all like to plan the output. I want to write a novel, put it on my to-do list.
Yes.
As if that's going to happen.
Right.
And what we do is we plan, and many productivity gurus will say, oh, just keep a to-do list and it'll magically get done. It doesn't work that way.
No.
Step one is keeping the to-do list. Step two is putting that time on your calendar. And what I want you to do, when I'm speaking generally here to the audience, is to make sure that you're planning the input, not the output.
Hmm.
So, you know, I would put on my calendar, finish chapter. But there's so many things that are outside of my control, right? Did I find the right research? Did I work fast enough? Was I creative enough? There's all these things I can't control.
Right.
The one thing I can control is butt in chair working on this.
That's
so
right.
Now in my calendar, it doesn't say finish the chapter. It doesn't say that on my to-do list. It says work on the chapter for 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
Whether inspiration strikes is not up to me.
Right.
I can't control that. What I can control and what I know it will not happen, inspiration will certainly not strike if I haven't controlled the input of being in the chair and doing the work.
Absolutely. It's the W. Somerset Maugham quote, you know, I only write when inspiration strikes. Fortunately, it strikes every morning at 8 a.m.
There you go. That's right.
All right, let's talk about hacking back those external triggers. What are some practical things people can do to begin to eliminate some of the things that are drawing us into distraction?
Sure. So, you know, I know from firsthand experience, I'm an industry insider. I help people design habit-forming products per my first book.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea behind that was to help people build the kind of products to help them build healthy habits in their lives, you know, products that help people exercise and eat right, et cetera. There's all kinds of things we can do with these technologies. And there's no doubt that these products are hacking our attention.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing, we can hack back. We are much more powerful than any of these distractions. The way we do this is by asking ourselves this critical question. Is the external trigger serving me or am I serving it? So if an external trigger is a notification on your phone that says, hey, it's time to write, it's time to go to the gym, it's time for that appointment, whatever it might be that you need to do, and it's moving you towards something you plan to do with your day, wonderful, do it. But if it's moving you towards doing something you didn't plan to do, something that is moving you towards distraction as opposed to traction, it's got to be removed from your life. So, of course, there's the simple stuff like change your notification settings, something that 2/3 of people with a smartphone never do, believe it or not. I mean, they complain about this, but really, you didn't take 5 minutes to change the notification settings so that only the external triggers that serve you are the ones that are allowed to interrupt your day. Easy stuff, you know, hacking back your laptop, easy stuff. But then we get into some of the territory that folks haven't really thought of, because they think it's productive work, right? So there's a whole chapter on how do you hack back email? How do you hack back group chat? How do you hack back meetings? And then I alluded to it earlier, how do you hack back the open floor plan office?
Yeah.
So there's a very simple solution to this. And the solution is to use what I call a screen sign. Now, I give everyone a screen sign in the book, in a copy of my book. In the back, there is this cardstock piece of paper that you pull out of the book. You fold it into thirds, you put it on your computer monitor, it's bright red, and it says, I'm indistractable, please come back later. And so you're telling your work colleagues, look, for the next, whatever, 45 minutes, an hour, I'm not saying you need to do this all day, but when you need to do that reflective work, as opposed to that constant reactive work that we all day between emails and meetings all day long, it's a way to signal to your colleagues, I need some quiet time, I need some time to focus. Because look, these open floor plan offices, they're not gonna go away. They save companies way too much money. We can't change that. What we can change is how we operate in that environment. Mm-hmm. So using this simple screen sign, I know some people say, well, that's what I put on headphones for. Here's the problem with headphones. By not sending an explicit message of what you are doing with your time, that you're concentrating with your time, people think you're watching YouTube. So we want to be able to proclaim, no, this is important. I am indistractable. Please come back a little bit later.
Yes. Well, and the default organizationally is interrupt me unless I tell you otherwise, right? And so I think having some sort of external signal that shows people from a distance, do not interrupt me right now. And there's a very good reason why I'm asking you not to interrupt me. I think it's also more socially... it also creates a better social currency within the organization, right? It's not just the antisocial person plugging in the headphones and sort of putting their head down and saying, you know, leave me alone. But instead it's, no, I'm doing important work that's going to be valuable to the organization right now.
Right.
You know, so I think having that external signal is so important.
Sure. And we can, you know, per step two, we can make time. I'm not saying don't be sociable with your colleagues. Make time for that, right?
Yes.
If you want to hang out with your colleagues, go to lunch with them, plan breaks. You know, let's say, hey, I'll see you at 2:15 at the water cooler in the snack room, or let's go get a cup of coffee. Do it. I think it's wonderful. I'm not saying you have to be productive all day long. We can also schedule the stuff that we need in order to relax, in order to take a break, in order to, you know, do whatever it is we want to do. But we want to do that stuff with intent, whether it's our phone reaching out to us and pinging us, whether it's a colleague tapping us on the shoulder. Any of those things can become distractions if we are doing them on someone else's schedule as opposed to on our schedule.
Yes. All right, let's talk about the final element here, which is preventing distraction with PACs. What does that mean?
Yeah, so PACs are a very well-studied technique. It's called making a pre-commitment. And so there are all different types of pre-commitments. Anytime you do something in advance, so that when the time comes and you may not be of sound mind, so to speak, and you may get distracted, that's what these pacts and pre-commitments are all about. So if you think about an advanced healthcare directive, where you write out in advance, if I should become incapacitated, here's what I want done medically. Or if you have a savings account, right, a retirement account, you say, look, I'm going to put money in this account, and if I withdraw it, I understand that there are stiff penalties. Or even getting married, right? Why do we get married in front of a crowd of people? Our friends, our family, our community, we're making a proclamation. We're saying we're making a pre-commitment. This is what we want to do so that when temptation might strike later on, we have that pact. We have a promise we've made to ourselves and to others. So this is the final fail-safe that we can use to prevent distraction. So there are three types of pacts. We have an effort pact, a price pact, an identity pact. An effort pact is when we put some bit of friction in between us and something we don't want to do. So for example, on my phone, I have this great app. It's free. It's called Forest. And every time I need to do focused work, I open the Forest app, I dial in how much time I want to focus for, and a little virtual tree is planted. Now, if I pick up the phone and I do anything with it, that little virtual tree dies.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Poor little virtual tree. And I don't want to be a virtual tree murderer. And so that little bit of a promise that I've made with myself is enough to tell me, oh, that's not what I wanted to do right now. Let me get back to what it was that I was working on already. And there are all kinds of tools. I describe many, many, many of these in the book. Most of them are absolutely free that we can use. Mm-hmm. We can also use these price packs where we have some kind of monetary disincentive to not get distracted. And then finally, we can use these identity packs, which are the most interesting. Turns out that this comes from the psychology of religion, where we know that people who have a moniker that they use to describe themselves don't have to exert a lot of self-control to resist temptation. So when a devout Muslim says every day, you know, they don't say to themselves, ooh, I wonder if I should drink that gin and tonic. You know, should I have that beer? No, devout Muslims don't drink alcohol. A vegetarian doesn't say to themselves, ooh, I wonder if I should have that BLT. No, vegetarians do not eat meat. It is who they are. And so having some kind of moniker has been shown to be very effective to make sure we don't get distracted. And so this is why the book is called Indistractable. Indistractable sounds like indestructible. And the idea here is that I want this to be a moniker. I want people to proudly say, no, this is who I am. You know what? I don't respond to emails in 30 seconds. That's not who I am. I don't, you know, let my attention and my life be controlled by others. I choose for myself. And yeah, you know what? In some religions, people wear unusual clothing. In some people eat in unusual ways. But that's how we affect change, right? The first generation, the early adopters of every societal change are sometimes the weirdo. Sometimes those are the people who are a little bit strange. Yeah, so you're the person who puts a sign in the office on their screen that says, I'm indistractable right now. You're the person who has a system around replying to email that might be a little different than others. But you know what? You're also the person who gets stuff done. You're the person who lives a happier life. You're the person who lives with personal integrity because you are indistractable.
Yes. You know, what is compelling about that is that really what you're describing is a life of bravery, I think, in today's society, right? I mean, I think it requires incredible bravery to say, I'm going to be indistractable. I'm not going to be pulled to and fro by all of the forces at work, but I'm going to choose to build my life in a way that is centered around what I value, not what everybody else values for me. And that can be challenging. Right? That can be challenging because it does. I mean, you're basically choosing to stand against the tide of culture right now in many ways.
Right. And you know what, though? We've been here before. I remember in the 1980s, when I grew up, when I was a kid, we had ashtrays all over our house. Now, my parents didn't smoke, and yet we had these ashtrays in my house because back in the 1980s, when you went to someone's house, you just expected them to light up in your living room. That was just what people did.
Yes.
Can you imagine if someone came to your house and lit up a cigarette in your living room? That'd be crazy, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Right? And it's, you know, there's no law that prevents that. That wasn't a legal matter. That was a cultural matter. We adopted what's called social antibodies. People learned these new ways of doing things. And so, you know, back then you were actually, if you were one of the first people who said, you know what, if you want to smoke, I need you to go outside because I don't want my children smoking. I don't want them having the secondhand smoke. It's not good for me. It's not good for them. Please go outside. That took a little bit of bravery, a little bit of courage. Right. And that's where we are right now when it comes to our digital devices. I am not one of these people that says, no, you have to get rid of them. I think that's silly. You know, I would get, you know, people get fired if they didn't check email. People would get fired if they weren't on group chat. The solution is not to stop using these tools. The solution is to use them in such a way that we can get the best of these technologies without letting them get the best of us.
Yes, I love that. Well, we've been talking with Nir Eyal. He is the author of Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. Nir, where can people find you if they want to come find out more about you and about the book?
Sure. So my blog is nirandfar.com. My first name is spelled N-I-R. So the blog is nirandfar.com. And the book is called Indistractable, How to Control Your Attention and Choose Your Life. It's available wherever books are sold. And if you go to indistractable.com, there's actually a free bonus video. There's a workbook that we couldn't fit into the manuscript of the book. So it's there on the website, 80 pages. It's complimentary. That's all at indistractable.com.
Fantastic. Well, Nir, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us and share insights with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.